Welcome to the Hooked on Sport Cricket Show. This is South Australia's summer cricket wrap, where we uncover the stories, personalities and moments that define cricket across South Australia and beyond. It's time to talk cricket with Sophie Hilditch and Ben Hook.
Hey Hookie, what a fortnight it has been. Let's get into talking about cricket because it's been a massive fortnight with the Ashes team being announced. But first of all, how's your week been?
Well, look, the week has been great. Saw an amazing performance by the Adelaide Fire women to bowl over the Canberra Chill at the State Hockey Centre yesterday. And then I saw probably the most jaw-dropping thing I've ever seen. The Adelaide Fire men, who've struggled a bit this year, let in 15 goals in one game of hockey. Now, so if you know your hockey, if you let in four or five goals, it's a bad day. They have conceded 15. Now, I understand the rules a little bit different because you have... If you score in general play, you get an opportunity for a one-on-one and therefore get a bonus goal. But 15 goals in an hour of hockey was one of the more outrageous things I've seen. Can I just add to that? If you thought the Adelaide Fire men were frustrated, can I just describe to you what a frustration it is when you decide to mow the lawns one morning and you've got to mow around your three-year-old's climbing and play system? There is nothing more frustrating for a male than having to mow around a kid's swing set. And I've just lived it only in the last hour and I'm still a little bit burning by it, Soph.
That is not where I saw this top of the show going, Hookie. So how about I just get you back on track? Why don't we start with Ben's best?
Before I get to Ben's best, did I note that you've been moving house in the last few days?
Yes, I have been. I have been moving house. One of the most frustrating... You know what? It could be more frustrating than mowing your lawns around children's stuff. I'm not sure, though.
I can't believe I've bowled you the greatest half volley of all time and you've decided to let it go rather than crash it through the covers. I would have thought the obvious thing was moving into a new house 100% more frustrating than mowing lawns around a kid's swing set.
No. I don't step on things that I don't know about, and I don't know about that yet, Hookie. So I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. I'll say it's a toss-up, but I'm not going to comment. I haven't had to do it yet.
Ben's best this week, Soph, Marnus Labuschagne. I just admire the way he has gone about his cricket career post being dropped from the Test team only a couple of months ago. He has just gone about making it absolutely certain that he returns to this team for the Ashes series. He put his spot beyond doubt, and he did it through sheer bloody-mindedness, this determination to return, to get back into the team. He embraced everything that he had to. He made a mountain of runs. He spoke honestly about what he knew that he had to do to return back into the team, and he 100% deserves his spot. Sam Constance, on the other hand, put himself under a media ban. No one's allowed to speak to him and understand what he's going through. He's trying to hide from all of this, whereas I really feel like Marnus just fronted up and embraced the whole challenge of returning himself back into the team. Selectors had no choice but to pick him. Marnus didn't have his hand out. He did it through runs. I admire what he has done to get here. And I really think he will go from being, you know, he's been a bit of a liability in the last few years, but he suddenly becomes a real asset for Australia. Whether he opens or bats at three, I think that's still up for conjecture. But for what he has done and where he has got to right now, he's Ben's best this week. Take me through, Sophie Starr.
Ben, I just shout out. I love that Ben's best. I actually completely agree with you. Marnus Labuschagne putting, you know, everything out in the media and showing what his goals are, putting his heart out on the line. I really respect it because there's nowhere to hide when you do that. So great Ben's best. But look, Sophie Starr, I'm a bit late to the party, but I've saved him up for our cricket episode. It was last weekend in the fourth grade. Graham Yates from East Torrens scored 51 runs at the top of the order. Now, this is a huge milestone because it gets him up to 10,000 career runs with East Torrens. It's the highest of all time for the East Torrens. He's an incredible player, playing a lot of premiership cricket. Notably, he played in an A-grade premiership alongside David Hooks 34 years ago.
Unbelievable. So I remember playing against Graham Yates, and he was one of the more experienced guys when I was young, Soph. So the fact that he's still out there, yes, playing fourth grade, but playing fourth grade for a premier club, the same club that he was playing for as a junior and a rising star 40 years ago and still doing it, absolute deserving of Sophie Starr. He is a genuine legend of South Australian local cricket, Graham Yates. 10,000 runs, my goodness. That is really special. Well done, Soph. Great stat. 34 years ago, played in an A-grade flag. Good job.
Yeah, 100%. Imagine having that loyalty to the one club. It's just incredible. But look, Ben, we've got to start talking about it because everyone is. The Ashes squad, Australia's squad of 15 people, was only just announced for this summer's Ashes. I'll talk you through it really quickly just so in case our listeners haven't seen it. But we've got Steve Smith as captain, Sean Abbott, Scott Boland, Alex Carey, Brendan Doggett, Cameron Green, Josh Hazlewood, Travis Head, Josh Inglis, Usman Khawaja, Manus Lambershane, Nathan Lyon, Mitch Stark, Jake Weatherald, and Bo Webster. Now, what have you made of it?
Yeah, so you've just listed 15 names there, Soph, and it seems to all revolve around one, Cameron Green, and what is his capacity to bowl, and therefore, where is his ideal spot in the team? I get the feeling that we've only got two teams to pick from here. If he can bowl, he'll go to six, and Bo Webster will miss out. If he can't bowl, he'll stay at three. Manus Lambershane will open, and it'll be Jake Weatherald that will miss out. Gee, it is fascinating for everything they have done, this Australian team, to get themselves so beholden around one player. I just feel is the only awkward thing about it. I've listened to all of those names you've talked about, Soph, and I think all of those selections are absolutely reasonable. But to be in this awkward spot where they are saying, whatever Cam Green does is how we're going to balance our side, I think is the one thing I would just put a little bit of an asterisk, I beg your pardon, alongside. That's the one, only thing I'm uncomfortable about. Reasonable team and certainly eminently capable of winning the Ashes. But yes, that is just the only thing I'm awkward about. We're going into the first test in Perth, Soph, and this is the only other point that I would make. Is there room to play both Cameron Green, who can bowl, and Jake Weatherald, and Bo Webster in the same team? And I want to make this point. We had the India, the Border Gavaskar Trophy test. The first test was in Perth last year. Nathan Lyon was almost a spectator in that Australian team. He bowled five overs in the first innings when India were knocked over for 160. He took two wickets for the match, both of them in the second innings. Both of them were against left-handers, so bowling out of the rough that's been created by the right-arm fast bowler. Both of those left-handers were going aggressively. His first wicket was Rishabh Pant. It was the 24th wicket to fall in the match. The game was essentially over by the time he actually got into the game. And my concern for Australia, if they're determined to pick Nathan Lyon, will it be too late for him to start to have an influence when the game has already gone apace? We're expecting to see a very similar wicket in Perth, and I do feel like that there is an opportunity for Australia to consider selecting Jake Weatherald as the opener, Manus Lambershane at three, Cameron Green to bat at six, Alex Carey at seven, and then Bo Webster is at eight to play as a fourth pace bowler, and maybe leave Nathan Lyon out, as they did in the West Indies for the most recent test that we've played, and Scott Boland to be at number 11. I think you need to think about that too, Soph, because with Pat Cummins out and Scott Boland in, you actually have depleted your batting lineup in its own right anyway, and we'll have quite a long tail when you consider that it'll be Stark at eight and then Hazlewood, Lyon and Boland at 9, 10, 11. It's a bit of a long tail. None of them really hold the bat that well. So, yeah, that's probably where I see the Australian team right now. The asterisk over what is Cam Green's role within the team, and then how do we structure around that, and what's Nathan Lyon's role within the team? I think they're the two things that I would probably identify. I don't know if you're thinking something similar or maybe something completely different.
No, look, actually on the exact same page as you, I was quite concerned as well with the Cameron Green pick, just being like you said, he dictates exactly what they're going to do, whether or not his bat can hold up to bowling. I mean, we're about to see it when they go all to the Sheffield Shield and play recently, but I don't know, I'm just a bit concerned. And you know what the other thing that has me a bit concerned, Hookie, is the age of this team.
Yeah.
The youngest person in this team is Cameron Green at 26 years old. Everyone else is 30 and above. And look, Ashes, we have to put our best foot forward. And I do think this team is probably leaning in towards that. The one thing you can't do is win, lose an Ashes at home. But I'm starting to look a little bit worried about Australia's transition. Looking at this team, they're all about to retire at pretty similar points. And where is this going to leave Australia? We don't have young ones in this side, realistically, learning from that experience, gaining from that experience. And I'm just scared of what we have in the side wings, and this transition process probably hasn't quite, you know, taken shape from the selectors.
Your point's well made. Australia does need a period of transition. It should have happened 2 years ago, Soph. Yep. They went too long with David Warner, and by extension, they've gone too long with Usman Khawaja. Nathan Lyon, yes, also in those late 30s in his own right. Your point's very well made, but this was not the time to do it. All we could do this time around was pick a team to beat England, and I think they've probably got those obvious 12 right. Yes, it's a squad of 15, but there are three guys in there that clearly are not going to play. But yes, there are some problems with what they have done in the last 3 years going forward over the next three. Well identified. Very good point.
Now, look, let's just go straight across to the Australia's T20 against the India Wrap. Look, it was a five-game series, which India won 2-1. The first and last game were called off due to bad weather. And actually, in those games, India got off to a hot start. In the last game, they had an incredible 52 runs off just 4.5 overs. We're 4 months out from the next T20 World Cup. Should we be worried, Hookie?
I think we're going to have to be a little bit worried about how we deal with high-quality spin, because we didn't deal with it particularly well in this series, and we're going to be dealing with high-quality spin on spin-conducive wickets when the T20 World Cup gets underway in India and Sri Lanka. Gee, I found that this was really difficult to focus on. It just did not grab my attention, this series, perhaps a little bit differently to the one-day series, and that was in part because we saw Virat Kohli and Rohit Sharma as a part of it. Can I just make one point? This is what scares me. It's one of the biggest stats to come out of this series, and I know Nathan Ellis bowled beautifully, but one of the biggest stats to come out of it was that Mitchell Marsh hit a 6 for 124 metres, and then Tim David exceeded that with a 6 that went 129 metres. You and I, on the golf episode, talk about how long the ball goes in men's professional golf. I'm also a little bit worried about how long the ball is going with these enormous bats in men's professional cricket. 129-metre sixes on boundaries that are only 65, 70 metres long seems a little bit excessive for me, Soph. And we're getting to the point that I think the game is getting a little bit out of balance again. Yes, I know that in the absolute most basic form of the game, seeing a six hit is thrilling for a crowd. But it's got to be a little bit harder than that, doesn't it? 129 metres the ball is being able to be hit. That's my great fear about what we're seeing in T20 cricket. And I don't want these to become just absolute one-sided bat fest where bowlers have got nothing to play for. And we are tending to head towards that with these enormous bats and the power that the players can wield while using them.
Yeah, it's a good point, Hookie. I hadn't actually really been thinking about that. I was probably still too distracted by the golf edition and us talking about distance that I hadn't then gone over the cricket edition. But look, I know you said that, yeah, I agree. The T20 for the men probably didn't quite grab my attention. But I was glued to the women, which was now a few weeks ago. But unfortunately, our Aussie women fell short in their semi-final in the ICC Women's World Cup one day. India managed to chase down 339 runs. This is the highest ever run trace in the World Cup, both across men and women. And they did go on to win the title against South Africa. So I thought I'd just give that a bit of a shout because I was glued to my TV on that one. Were you?
I mean, I actually spent more time watching the final where India pretty comfortably accounted for South Africa. South Africa showed some glimpses. It was great to see Laura Woolvart, who, of course, is going to be a part of the Adelaide Strikers team once again. She certainly played her role. But we did identify, didn't we, that this was the worst possible semi-final outcome for Australia. And that traditionally in World Cups, you need to start slow and build, whereas the Australian women started in an absolute flurry and kind of fell in a bit of a hole at the end. They didn't play their best game. And India, it's certainly getting to a stage now where you need to play your best if you're going to find your way past them. I thought it was interesting, and we've had Bharat Sundaraiah on this show before, and he did talk about how family members of his who are young girls are really starting to embrace cricket in India now. So I think what's going to be wonderful to watch is how in the next generation India develops their women team. They've been a little bit behind how fast their men's team has progressed, but I think we might see in another 20 or 30 years, so who knows, we might still be doing this stuff, but I reckon we'll be discussing where the Indian women's cricket team is, because if they're the juggernaut like the men's team is, it's going to make for, well, they're going to be very, very hard to beat wherever they play, and they're going to bring enormous crowds wherever they play as well, which is one of the great features of India being here for the white ball series over the last 3 or 4 weeks.
100%. Now let's go to news around the nation. Let's start talking about the Sheffield Shield, which has just started. 14 of the 15 players are now the test squad are playing, apart from Gwaja, who's the only one. They're just managing him a little bit. He's obviously 38 years of age. Any thoughts on this Sheffield Shield so far?
You know what? It's been absolutely brilliant, Soph. And isn't it wonderful to see, as we close in on the Ashes series, that all of these guys are getting the opportunity to go back and represent their state? So the spotlight on the domestic Sheffield Shield competition is wonderful. Even I've got the live stream on at the moment as I'm just looking over and seeing that Tasmania 5 for 162. So a little bit of a rearguard action here. Jordan Silk, of all people, we're expecting to see Weatherald and Webster dominate for Tasmania, but it's Jordan Silk on 51 from 96 balls. Jake Weatherald, I think, was knocked over for 23, was the first wicket to fall today. And South Australia looked to be getting on top early, but that game's just sort of come back to about level now, but we're looking forward to seeing Alex Carey and Travis Head bat for South Australia, which I can't remember the last time Travis Head played a four-day game for South Australia. So, yeah, wonderful. Victoria's playing New South Wales, 4 for 165 Victoria, and then I reckon Western Australia and Queensland get underway over in Perth tomorrow. So just wonderful that the spotlight's on it. Talk about the spotlight. Great to have the WBBL, yes. I beg your pardon, back, Soph. So that got underway yesterday. The Adelaide Strikers will start their game. It's 2:37. That game starts in 3 minutes. So we'll probably get to the end and I'll try and give you a bit of an update of what's going on there. But the winners yesterday, the Melbourne Renegades won by 7 wickets in a DLS game. So 3 for 66 they were after 7 overs. That was enough to go past the Brisbane Heat's 133. Hobart Hurricanes played a thriller against the Sydney Thunder, with them chasing those runs down. The Hurricanes chased down 182 to win. They got that with 3 balls to spare. And then a really dominant performance from the Sydney Sixers, who are a threat this year. They bowled the Perth Scorchers out for 109 and then chased that didn't lose a wicket on the way to chasing the score. So a wonderful opening partnership of Elise Perry and Sophia Dunkley of 112 to win that game. The interesting one, Sophie Devine. I'm a big fan of Sophie Devine, did play for the Adelaide Strikers, was given out stumped on the third umpire, refused to walk, and actually had to be given out a second time by the third umpire. I'll be interested to see if there's repercussions for that. There absolutely should be. It was kind of outrageous that she didn't accept the umpire's decision. That is going to be a fascinating watch, the penalty for Sophie Devine. You cannot. Yes, it was contentious for a while. It was ultimately determined that it was the correct decision, but it was kind of shameful that she just stood there and everyone just sort of said, all right, well, let's go back to the third umpire a second time before the decision had to be affirmed. So that'll be a good watch this week.
Well, I have seen that one, Hookie. That's a very interesting watch. I would have thought once the third umpire, it's kind of like a judge. Once the third umpire calls you out, you just got to walk. Like, that's a bit ridiculous.
I'll tell you the story very quickly. Ash Gardner was bowling off spin. Sophie Devine came running down the wicket and tried to slog it out over mid-wicket, missed it. Emma Mannix-Jeeves, a young wicketkeeper from Tasmania who's just come into the Sixers team, made a horrendous attempt at the take, fumbled it off her chest, and it bounced onto the stump. And it took just a little bit of time for the bail to fall off. In the meantime, she had gone to sort of grab the ball, missed it a second time. She didn't have a great keeping performance, to be fair to her, but it looked like she might have swiped the stump. And just as it looked like she may have swiped the stump, that was when it all lit up, because that was at the time that the bail fell off. So it all happened pretty quickly. It was worked out that the third umpire was absolutely correct, but the fact Sophie Devine just refused to accept it and stood around, and this was 2 more minutes before she had to be given out a second time, bad for cricket.
Yeah, 100%. Interesting one, and one we'll watch out for. But let's head over to some state news. Let's go to the premiership for South Australia. The SACA Premier Men just started their two-day comp this weekend. It's the first day. Hookie, your top three performers of day one.
Top three, okay. You might be getting a yellow card here because I might just add one or two extra in, just a couple of unlucky fourth and fifth place, but I'll stick them on the podium anyway. Josh Kahn has made 141 not out from 122 balls for Port Adelaide against Woodville. He had 13 fours and 7 sixes. He was the recruit from Northern District, so he's having an influence very early on. Jake Fraser-McGurk, a very familiar name in South Australian cricket, 129 from 143 balls, leading West Torrens to an enormous total against Sturt. Ben Menenti got runs. Kelvin Smith was coming in at 7 in that team. He was opening the batting for South Australia 2 years ago. So West Torrens have got some real strength and some real depth at the moment. The third one I'd mention is Cam Fatchin. The season's 3 days old. He's got 13 wickets. He took 8 for in the first game and 5 for 69 against East Torrens yesterday. So his team are 1 for 71, chasing East Torrens 186. The other game in Division 1, Tea Tree Gully had a lot of contributors to end up with 335 for the loss of 9 wickets against Adelaide. Just one I want to give you from Division 2 because the competition does get overlooked a little bit. Jake Winter for Glenelg has made 170 against Prospect. We've identified Prospect as one of the teams that is under a bit of pressure at the moment. They ended up declaring, and Prospect are 1 for 34 overnight. There was nearly 400 runs scored at Glenelg Oval on Saturday in just 88 overs. So what an amazing day that was. Northern Districts is playing the SACA Under-19. SACA Under-19's ended up with 252, I think. And then the other game, Southern District, 4 for 103, chasing 183. I said Southern District were going to be one of the real strugglers this year, and I liked Uni as the winners of the Division 2 competition, but that's a really even game at the moment. Southern District could comfortably chase down those last 81 runs with 6 wickets in hand, and University need to accept that they are way too Sam Kerbett dependent at the moment, and I just don't see anyone else in that lineup who you can rely upon to bat the 3-plus hours in that form of the game that you need to be able to post big scores. So, yeah, really interesting day one of round two in the SACA Men's Premier competition. So some games that are well-placed and some really impressive batting performances as well.
Hookie, I don't even know why I bother to try and get some parameters to stick to. That was it like 20 minutes we just had to listen to you then, but loving every moment.
Well, I got the whole competition done. It's all over. It's behind us now.
Now, let's go to the SACA Premier Men, the one-dayers. It was a 4-wicket win to Port Adelaide over Glenelg. Prospect swept aside by East Torrens. Any thoughts on these games? Let's try and make it a little bit quick, this one.
Okay, yes. Look, the pretty simple thing to say about the West End One Day Cup match between Port Adelaide and Glenelg is that Cameron Valenti is just an absolute pro. So did a little bit with the ball, but then comes out batting at number 5, makes 79 out from 81 balls and leads Port Adelaide to victory. Zach McCabe got some runs down low. Will Forster, my boy, also got some runs down low, but it was really all about Cam Valenti holding that innings together. And then wowee, Prospect just said that they're in a bit of trouble. They're all out for 72, Soph. East Torrens was almost like a bit of a Mickey Mouse game. They only used 2 bowlers. So Campbell Thompson from one end and Dylan King from the other. King's ended up with 3 for 39 from 9.3. Campbell Thompson bowled out, took 7 for 31. Very impressive left armour for East Torrens, but all out 72. Yeah, yikes. Not a big weekend for Prospect.
No, not a great weekend for Prospect, but let's turn to the men's T20. We're 4 games. Who were your top 3 performers from these ones?
I'll try and keep this to 3 this time, Soph.
That would be great.
I'll go Hanno Jacobs, who took 4 for 16 off 3 overs to lead Sturt to a win over University. Lackluster performance from University with the bat once again. We might have to get their batting coach on at some point. You can maybe start to deal with that. Harry Menenti will go at number 2, 77 not out from 52 balls, led West Torrens to a great win over Tea Tree Gully in a high-class affair. And then the third one I'll identify is Lloyd Pope. He took 2 for 16 off 4 overs, and you think in isolation, that's not magnificent figures. But this game was 185 versus 169, and Pope going for 16 off his 4 overs was the difference between those two teams. So if Pope goes for 2 for 35 off his 4, Adelaide wins, But the fact that he was just so tight and restricted the scoring so well, that was the reason why Kensington won that one. So, yeah, Jacobs, Manenti, Pope all dominating in the competition yesterday.
Turning over to the Premiership women, they had their one dayer. Kensington defeated Sturt by 61 runs. Glenelg held off Adelaide by 37 runs. What did you make of the girls this weekend, Hookie?
Yeah, I feel like Sturt blew an opportunity there. They were 2 for 100 chasing the 202 that Kensington sent them, all out for 141. So, it was three out, all out. That would be a very, very disappointing performance from them. And then the other game, Adelaide, you know, who were flying in the T20 competition, they were a little bit disappointing against Glenelg. They bowled really well early, Adelaide, and in the end, Glenelg settled for 154. Anasuma Shangwei, who's an Adelaide striker's leg spinner and an impressive performer, she got some runs down low. And then, yeah, Adelaide will be really disappointed with the chase because they've got some good batting in that team at the moment. But, ended up falling very short, all out for 117. So a little bit of a setback for the Buffaloes, while the Seahorses will be delighted with that result.
And we're recording this on a Monday afternoon, as our listeners might have predicted as we're talking about the women's WBBL. But there's two games tonight for the women's T20. That's Kensington v West Torrens and Sturt v Adelaide. Glenelg have the bye. Hookie, have we got any predictions? I'd love this.
I reckon Kensington are a little bit depleted with the fact that the BBL, the WBBL has started. So players like Eliza Doddridge, Maddie Penner are all out of that team. But we've identified West Torrens as a club that is really, really struggling at the moment. And that will only be exacerbated by the fact that Gemma Barsby, who's undoubtedly their best player, is going to be missing from the lineup. I expect Kensington to win that pretty comfortably. Sturt and Adelaide, I think, would be a really good game. Adelaide have been going very well in this competition. But I reckon Sturt, if their better players do the job at the top of the order, as they should have done yesterday against Kensington, then I'll pick Sturt tonight. So there we are. We can have a look at that next week. I'll go the Browns and the Blues to beat the Eagles and the Buffaloes, respectively.
Love it. You know me. I'll be writing notes on this. I can't wait to speak to you again and see whether or not your predictions were right. Hookie.
The fact is, if I get my predictions right, I know you screw up that piece of paper and throw it in the bin. However, if I'm wrong, you just go to the photocopy machine and make 1,000 of them and start pinning them up. You know those pin-up boards that you see in supermarkets and cafes around the place? I know that's where they'll end up.
Mate. Don't throw stones at glass houses. You do exactly the same thing. Calm down. We go to the golf show. You ask me to talk about something and then you'll bring up, 10 episodes again what I said. So, you know what? You could just pipe down Chappie over there. My gosh.
Fair enough.
Now, let's
I copped it there, Wallace. My goodness.
Let's go to the sack of Brownlow. It's the game. It's men South Australia versus Western Australia. It's the Sheffield Shield. It was the only game played over this fortnight. So a couple of comments and your thoughts and winners.
Yeah, okay. So a drawn game. South Australia really did drive the game in the end. Brendan Doggett finished with 7 wickets for the match, including 6 wickets in the first innings. He was named player of the match, so it makes sense that he gets 3 votes in Hookie and Sophie's Brownlow medal. Nathan McSweeney took 3 wickets and made a fantastic second innings 100, so I gave him the 2 votes. 1 vote to Jake Lehman, who got 90-odd in the first innings. That was pretty important for South Australia when our top order had wobbled a little bit. So that gets us to a leaderboard that looks like this. Mackenzie Harvey on 7 votes is still our outright leader, but Jake Lehman has narrowed the gap to 1. He moves from 5 votes to 6 votes. Wes Agar is in 3rd place, but he's now alongside Nathan McSweeney, who picked up 2 votes and jumped up from 3 to 5. And then Brendan Doggett is in outright 4th position on 4 votes. Jordan Buckingham, Nathan McAndrew, Henry Hunt, Courtney Webb, Ellie Johnson, all on 3. Connor McInerney, Lloyd Pope, AJ Wellington, Maddie Penner, Harry Manenti, all on 2, and Gemma Barsby and Courtney Neal, all on 1. It's probably just worth clarifying, Sophie, that we've got a lot of men who are high up on the leaderboard. And when the women come back and start playing WNCL, their votes will start to come through the system. It'll narrow the gap. And I'll just explain this to you because you told me, Sophie, that this is something really complicated. If the men have played 17 games and the women have played 11 games, then the women's votes will very simply be multiplied by 17 and divided by 11, and then you will have parity in the votes. And so that is a very, very simple calculation. You said that it was going to be awfully difficult for Wallace to work out. He's a smart bloke. I'm actually a smart bloke too. And we came up, well, I'm a dumb bloke, but I've been able to come up with that fairly simple calculation. So looking forward to, as we build through the season, as the Sheffield Shield continues, the WBBL ends and the WNCL comes back in, we're going to see those votes really close up between the women and the men over the coming months.
100%. I kind of enjoy it because we don't quite know where the women are sitting at the moment. So they're going to make a massive jump towards the end of the season. Well, before we wrap up, Ben, I have to start talking about Eloise Sheridan. She is a rising star in the umpiring ranks. I know you. She's actually a friend of a show. I reckon you've interviewed her back in the day. Yep.
So you've been listening back to old episodes just to – you're looking for more receipts, are you?
Always looking for receipts, but this is actually a positive receipt for you. She has just umpired, and we spoke about it at the top of the show, so I probably should have put it in there, but she did umpire the final of South Africa versus India in the Women's ICC World Cup. Just a massive achievement, and look, I can't wait to see what she does next. She just keeps on climbing.
Yeah, brilliant, Soph. Well done. Yeah, it's probably the only positive about Australia missing the final is we got to have an Australian umpire and, of course, our very own South Australian Eloise Sheridan. She did appear on our show back in its early iteration, wasn't it, Wallace? She came on the show with Irish international player Mary Waldron, who, when she wasn't playing cricket for Ireland, was umpiring cricket here in South Australia and was very, very impressive as well. So, yeah, great to reminisce on what Eloise has done over the last few years and see her reach all the way to the top of Women's World Cup final. Quite incredible.
And talking about women's cricket, Hookie, how about you give us an update on the WBBL score? How are our Adelaide Strikers going?
They're playing the Melbourne Stars. The Stars have batted first, and they've got away a little bit here. Meg Lanning, 28 from just 20 balls. So 1 for 51, the Stars, towards the end of the sixth over. Sophie Eccleston playing her first game for the Adelaide Strikers, a star England international. But Meg Lanning, a bit of a thorn in the side for the Strikers at the moment.
And, Hookie, I always love it. Can you give me your community story of the fortnight?
Yeah, I have to just talk about a lad playing in the LO2 competition of the Para District Cricket Association. His name is Eid Mohammed. He is playing for a club called the Hazara Pioneers Cricket Club. He scored 565 runs already for the season at an average of 125. Let me just go through his innings for the season thus far. He started out with a 99, then 140, then 102, then 165, then 59, and he rounded it out on the weekend with, guess what, a beautiful zero, a duck. Oh. It's the all-time great level of this game, isn't it? But 565 runs for Eid Mohammed of the Hazara Pioneers in the Para District Cricket Association. What a start to the year. My community player of the week.
As always, such a great story. Hookie, as always, I've enjoyed talking to you. And we have a couple of interviews coming up this week, so encourage our listeners to watch out. They're all to do with cricket and they're all to do with the upcoming Ashes.
Going to drop a name?
No, I'll leave them hanging, but it's a personal connection.
Oh, very nice. Well, I'm looking forward to whoever it is we're going to be chatting to, and I'm sure that'll drop later in the week.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
That stumps on this episode of the Hooked on Sport Cricket Show. Thanks for listening. Help us reach more cricket-minded people just like you by following us and leaving a review. We look forward to your company next time on the Hooked on Sport Cricket Show.